From Relay FM, this is the Pen Addict, episode 606. Today's show is brought to you by Pen Chalet. My name is Mike Hurley, and I'm joined by Brad Dowdy. Hi, Brad.
What's up, Mike? What time is it, boy?
This is only a way that I could check, and we will talk about that later on in today's episode.
Yeah, also, seriously, what time is it? Because we're in that no man's land of time zone.
Well, it's fine for you. It's fine for you, but this is the good one for me, where so you had daylight saving time.
Sure.
Is it?
I don't
are you
even
in
know.
Daylight savings time now?
I'm on America time, Mike. That's all you need to know.
Well, whatever it is, the time changed. Mm-hmm. But the time doesn't change for me for another 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. But that means I get 3 weeks of all of my shows being an hour earlier, by and large, with one exception, which is good.
Generally good,
Then I get to go home earlier.
Yes. Yeah, so... So that's the good stuff. So this is like 3 weeks. We're off for like 2 or 3 weeks off kilter.
I feel like it didn't used to be 3 weeks, but
yeah,
I don't feel like it was that long. I think it used to be 2 weeks, or maybe this is one of these things where it just surprises me every time.
I don't know.
This used to be the bad one when I had an actual job, like a 9-to-5. This was rough because I had to like rush home every day.
Oh yeah.
But now it's great.
Well, we have other good surprises. I have another big surprise. This show, and I think it's the first topic we're going to hit here. I think it really caught you off guard.
Yes, I refer our listeners to Brad's wonderful email newsletter, Refill, which is available for members of penaddict.com. And Brad was doing a hot or not of different things. And this one caught my eye specifically. Hot, unique paper sizes. So talking about things like Plotter, Traveler's Field Notes,
The theme system.
Thank you. You didn't put that though in your refill, did you? Just note that for the record. Also, Sidekick Notepad is its own paper
Sidekick,
size.
Yep.
And Brett says they all skirt the standards and lean into their own thing. We are better for it, apparently, and not paper standards. While I appreciate a solid commitment to standards, it's no longer a deal breaker when thinking about paper. So what's happened here then?
I've changed my tune over the last, I don't know, 12 months or so. Like, and I've mentioned that I've softened my stance on standards only or GTFO, right? And I just think that the preponderance of new paper makers, or even some older, more established, thinking of Travelers, notebooks, have leaned into their own thing for their own reasons, and I'm glad they do, because they're taking these changes, they're experimenting, they're planting their flag in the ground, saying this is what we believe in, and who am I to say that they're doing it wrong? And like, I'm willing to change my stance on these things, right? Like,
I mean, I agree, obviously, because I think that non-standard paper sizes allow for creativity in product design.
Yeah, I do. I do too. And so one of my old standard stances was actually a very American issue when we were manufacturing notebooks for NOC. It cost more to make a standard size because, again, these are international standards and not really seen in the U.S. Well, I was adamant that we were going to make an A5 notebook, and we'd go to our printer and they were like, well, this is going to cost more because we can only get the paper in this other size. I don't even know what other size it would be, but it wouldn't be like an A1 palette of paper, right? Where they could just, you know, efficiently cut it down to size. Yep. They were like, there's going to be a lot more waste and we're going to have to cut it. And I'm like, yes, that's what we're going to do because it has to be A5. And in retrospect, like, I'm completely happy with that decision at the time, and I wouldn't change a thing. But the more I look at the things I'm using today, that was, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago that we made that notebook. As I sit here at my desk and use things, I'm using one A5 notebook, and everything else that's sitting around is kind of, you know, just a different size, like a non-standard size. And I really enjoy these products. So, you know, what's the harm in making your own size?
I think standards are a good guide, right? Like, you can kind of work towards the standard, but you should be able to be flexible on it if it's in service of making the product better.
Yeah. One of my core stances in the past was, well, what about accessories, right? And it's just, you know, whatever. It's like you can't, you know, if you're buying into like an A5 notebook system and you're buying a cover and you're buying these different things that fit that system, and then, you know, you find another notebook you like and you can't, you know, you have to rebuy accessories if that's your thing.
Like, yeah, but that's such a minor issue. Standards don't solve that problem because you can use varying thicknesses of notebook.
Yep.
Right. So if you have a notebook cover that takes a 200 page notebook, but you've now bought a 400 page notebook, well, it's not going to fit anymore, even though they're both A5.
Exactly. So yeah, I am very much pro the experimentation and the discussion and the design.
Never thought this day would come.
All these notebooks. Yeah.
You know, I'm proud of your growth.
Yep. Yep. I think we're better off for the experimentation, which I think is probably in general a good way to think about it instead of being forced down one path.
Yeah.
If you will.
All right.
So yeah, that's good. I am about to force a path though, Mike, and that is with the Uniball pin bracket. It is bracket season, of course, with March Madness taking place in the U.S. Every company has to do a bracket. Last year, we covered Lamy's bracket and told them how wrong they were in many of their choices. So this year, we're going to talk about Uniball's bracket and tell them how wrong they are in their bracket choices. So what I want to do, Mike, is I'm going to give my entire bracket here. So what Uniball has done, they've released this on their Instagram. You vote on their Instagram stories, which is, you know, whatever. Seems like a challenge.
It's a way to take votes, you know?
It is. It's a way to take votes. It's fine. And the good thing that I like about this bracket, it's only 16 pins, right? So we have 8 pins on one side of the bracket, 8 pins on the other. You know, we'll go through all the entrants here. They have already done the first vote, which I have not looked at the results yet. So we're going to do that in a minute. I have not pulled that up to look at. But we're going to take their initial bracket, which we'll put a link in the show notes to Instagram. You will have to embiggen this in any way that you can. It is not very legible in the standard size. So we're going to start on the top left of the bracket, Mike. And this is Uniball, obviously with Uniball products. And it should come as the shock to no one that I have a lot to say about this bracket. So we're going to go first. The first one, they went easy on me. So they did a good job of doing comparable products in the first round matchup. So we have the Uniball Vision. In other parts of the world, like in the UK where you are, Mike, this is the Uniball EYE. And it's going up against the Vision Elite. This is a no contest walkover Vision Elite win. Even though I think the Vision is a very popular pen, it's one of the worst pens that Uniball makes because the ink, the rollerball ink, and I've been on my rollerball kick here recently. This is the one rollerball pen I do not like because it is just a straight up flood of ink on the page. For some people, that's a pro, right? Like artists really like the Vision because the amount of ink it puts on the page, right? I do not like it from a writing perspective because it's just a flood. The Vision Elite, for some reason, is a completely different flow of ink. It's very much more metered. It's a lot nicer to use, and I think the Vision Elite's a great pen, so that's easy. The second one going down the left side of the bracket here is the Uniball Onyx, which is their classic rollerball office pen, right? This is a pen you would buy by the dozen, throw them in the office supply cabinet, and that is going against the Uniball Deluxe, which is kind of the same type of refill, but in a more premium barrel. So this is, so the regular workers would get the Onyx, and then the C-suite gets the Deluxe. Like, that's kind of how it operates, right? Because they're fancier people. Mm-hmm. I like both of these pens. The Deluxe is a pen I used a bunch, like back in the 90s. Over the Onyx, even though I use the Onyx similarly. So I'm going to have to pick the Deluxe here. So we have the Vision Elite moving on and then the Deluxe moving on. The next category, they start to lose me a little bit. So the next matchup is the Jetstream versus the Jetstream 101. Now, there's a million different versions of Jetstream. This is the Jetstream in this scenario is the classic capped Jetstream pen, one of the original styles. And then the Jetstream 101 is kind of the stick pin version, more like the Onyx version of the Jetstream, right? It's just supposed to be streamlined, much less expensive. And, you know, even though it's got the same refill, same ink type, this was not an easy one because both of these pens suck. I just want to be clear. So we're going to take the classic Jetstream on this one and hope it gets knocked out here pretty soon in a future bracket. Because the bottom of the left side of the bracket is the Jetstream RT, which is the follow-up to the regular Jetstream in the previous bracket, but just the click version, against the Jetstream BLX, which is also a click version, but has the BLX ink, which is, in this case, I'm going to assume it's blue-black. That's what the picture looks like, but there's actually some other really cool colors in here. And I'm going to take the BLX because of the ink color options. So we have the Elite versus the Deluxe in the final eight, and then we have the Jetstream versus the Jetstream BLX. So let's switch over to the other side of the bracket here. Mike, is this as thrilling for you as it is for me?
I'm on the edge of my seat, Brad.
Oh, good. So we flip it over to the other side and we get quite a range of pins. The first, like the first matchup on the other side of the, on the left side of the bracket, the right side of the bracket is the Gel Impact versus the Signo DX. Again, this is a walkover. That's the DX all day long and twice on Sundays. I don't even know what that means. But the Gel Impact is basically your wider barrel Signo refills, like your 0.7s and your 1.0 millimeters. And the DX just has way more variety and it's just a flat out better pen. One of my favorite pens of all time. So the DX goes. Next up, Mike, we have two pens I literally had to Google search.
Okay.
Which is astonishing to me. And I figured out what they are. So they're calling this, I wonder if this is like an introduction of this new naming convention here. So we have the Elements versus the Spectrum. Mm. I have never heard of either of these pens, but what the Elements is the classic Jetstream Sport. And that's my favorite Jetstream of all time. And I don't know why it's called the Elements now, but if you look at it, it's literally what the Jetstream Sport is and used to be. Maybe this is just its new name. The Spectrum is similar. I've never heard of the Spectrum. And if you look at the picture, it's the Signo RT1, which is another awesome pen. These are two great pens. I've just literally never heard them called these names. So maybe they're just switching up the marketing a little bit on these. This was a top tier selection here. Both of these were very, very difficult to pick from. They're both two of my favorite pens. And we're going to take the Spectrum, which is the Signo RT1 model, just because there's more ink color variety in the Spectrum. And it's a really good pen. And it's one I highly recommend. Next up, we head into the pencil bracket. We head into the oddities bracket here, except for one standout, which you'll see in a second. The Chroma mechanical pencil, which I've never used, versus the Kuratoga. Again, the Uni Kuratoga, easy and a walkover. That is like not even close, not even a fair fight here. This is, I would be shocked if the Chroma won, unless there was like a BTS uprising in the votes to pull the Chroma through for some reason.
Do you think
that the
BTS fans are lined around the Chroma?
We're going to find out here in a minute when I go to the next bracket.
We're
going to
find out.
And then the last one is the Emote, and it looks like they're using the Emote marker for this, because the Emote also comes in a mechanical pencil version, a colored pencil version. We're going to go with the Emote marker versus the Uni Pen Fineliner. This is a tough decision, and I think I have to go with the pen, which is the standard fineliner. Even though the Emotes are really, really good and they have a lot of cool colors, I think the fineliner is the way to go.
Okay.
All right. Before I continue the bracket, and we have the Elite 8 left, I'm going to go over to Uniball's feed, and I'm going to look at who has won this round, their first rounds here, because I'm pretty sure it's on there. Let's see here. So, yeah, we're on to round two. Let's see here. Okay, so the Vision Elite, won that bracket.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there is a pen missing, Brad. That like that like and I'm trying to Google it and I can't find the name of it. Like the very standard Uniball pen. Like the click one.
Yeah, so we're going to get to it. I actually have a note.
Okay,
there's two that are missing.
Okay, good. Because I feel like I'm losing my mind here. I'm like, where is the pen that I think should
hold on
this?
That. All yes, right. Hold on that. Because there's actually a perfect matchup that would have been better in one of these categories. Probably like over the Emote and Fineliner that we didn't get. All right, so the Vision Elite and the Deluxe, which is what I picked. Then we have the Jetstream, which is what I picked, and the Jetstream BLX. So I was 100% right on the first one. So I was thinking what I would pick, not what the fans would pick, but we are exactly lined up on the left side of the bracket. The Gel Impact beat the Signo DX.
It's a travesty.
It is a travesty, but I get it because the DX is only recently, like in the past 5 to 7 years, been a store shelf pen, right? This was not a worldwide release like the Gel Impact. So less people are familiar with the DX than the Gel Impact. So I'm picking the DX every time. I'm not surprised that the Gel Impact won just from an awareness perspective, right? Mm. From a shelf space perspective, the Gel Impact has more shelf awareness than the DX. So I get that. The next up, I had no idea what would win here. They picked the Elements over the Spectrum, which the Elements is the Jetstream Sport, and the Spectrum is the Signo RT1. I'm not surprised that that won there. I love the Elements too. That was kind of like an unfair matchup, pretty much, because both of them are very, very good. And then the Kuratoga versus the Chroma, the Kuratoga won, and then the Fineliner won against the Emote. So I matched up with the vote except for the Gel Impact beating the DX and the Elements beating the Spectrum. So to your point, there are, before I finish out the bracket here, which now we're pretty much in the easy part, to your point, what is missing, and instead of the Emote and Fineliner matchup, we should have had a Uni Signo 207 versus a Uni 1R. And I don't understand why either of those pens, even one of those pens, should have made this bracket somewhere. The Signo 207 instead of the Gel Impact, I don't know, either of them over the Emote and the Fineliner. The 207 and 307 has to be one of their best sellers around the world. And I don't know why that's not in the bracket. And then the 1R and the Uni 1 should have been in here because that's their most popular current pen. So I'm guessing you were thinking of the Signo 207, which is the classic.
I think so.
That's the G2 competitor.
Yeah, this is what, yes. This is exactly what I'm thinking of, yes.
Yeah. So I had a note that the 207 and the Uni 1 should have been a matchup instead of the Emote and Fineliner. That would have been a better competition because those pens are super popular. I don't understand why they're not in here. Or even the one of the Jetstream, like on the left side of the bracket where there's four Jetstreams, like two of those could have been removed. Like the BLX doesn't need to be here, even though it won. The BLX and the 101 don't need to be there, right? You could have just done the Jetstream versus the Jetstream RT.
Obviously, I love it, but it doesn't make sense to me to have the Kuratoga in this bracket. Like, I don't get it.
Spoiler alert. Kuratoga is going to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
I'm picking the Kuratoga. I believe the Kuratoga will win the whole thing.
But that's why it doesn't make any sense. It's like, yeah, it's a different thing. It's like, why not put a notebook in
and
here
they,
too?
They seated it correctly to where it's going to have no competition through the whole thing, which is why it's going to win. So real quick, my final four would be the Vision Elite and then the Jetstream BLX. With the Vision Elite making the final, right? That's a pretty weak left side of the bracket. If the Vision Elite, which is a pen that I love, makes it all the way through. And then the other side, I had the DX versus the Kuratoga in the final four with the Kuratoga getting through. Mm-hmm. And then the Kuratoga, it's a walkover in the final against literally every other pen on the left side of the bracket, right? Yep. Like it's, the Kuratoga has to beat the Fineliner right now, and then the Kuratoga has to beat the Gel Impact or the Elements, which it's going to do. And then against any other pen that's going to make it through on the left-hand side, the Kuratoga is going to win very easily, I think. So we'll see how the bracket shakes out, but it's always fun to have a little bracket season and see how these companies do it. But like you, I'm just more curious about the 207 and 1 omission, given that those are the two of the most popular pens that they sell. So interesting stuff. Good times, bracket season.
Bracket season indeed. If you decide that you want to buy up a bunch of pens of your own and make your own bracket, I have a great place for you to go, and that's Pen Chalet.
Let's go.
Thanks to Pen Chalet for the support of this episode. They sell authentic, amazing rollerballs, fountain pens, ballpoints, mechanical pencils, and so much more. They have your favorite brands, and they believe in giving you the best products they can at the best prices possible. Pen Chalet have fast and reliable customer service. They add new pens every single month, and every 2 weeks, you'll be able to find new deals over at Pen Chalet, as well as the incredible deals that you get for being a listener of this show, which you can get to by going to penchalet.com. That's PENCHALET.com. Click the podcast link at the top of the website. Enter the password PENADDICT for this week's special offers and to get the code you need to save 10% on anything at any time at Pen Chalet. What's catching your eye this week, Brad?
So the first thing that caught my eye was the second pen listed, which is the Monteverde Ritma Gala Convertible Pocket Neck Fountain Pen. Big Damn. Name here. But you look
Easy
at the picture.
For you to say.
Yeah. But basically what caught my eye was the picture, right? I'm not familiar with this pen, but it's basically a necklace pen. Like it's a classic design from like the early 1900s. You saw a lot of these necklace type pens. But the strap immediately reminded me of that's kind of like a Y Studio thing in a larger fashion. And then you scroll down and there's actually the Y Studio Brassing Portable Ballpoint Pens, which is a really fun, really great pen. Usually don't see them on sale, which that's a really neat pen to consider if you like a ballpoint and a unique barrel. It's a heavy brass barrel pen, faceted. I think six-sided pen and really neat. I'm pretty sure I've reviewed that on the blog. And of course, being the Y Studio fanboy that I am, I really enjoyed it. Then there's two Visconti's that caught my eye because they kind of shouldn't be in here. The Visconti Woodstock. The material that they have here is really, really nice. And I've seen a bunch of pictures of these and they look spectacular. And the price is ridiculous for what it is. And then completely unfair to me, the Visconti Kaleido fountain pen and fire opal is now very discounted, and they have the nib size that I like, and it's going to be problematic. So just something to think about out there at penchalet.com. Some really neat stuff.
Just a couple of things that caught my eye. A couple of models of the stipulated capless Da Vinci capless pens.
Yeah,
some bananas prices. So if that was like a mechanism you were interested in trying out, there's some really good prices in those pens as well.
Interesting. I'm looking at them now. Wow. Yeah, that's very cool.
No, really great prices in those. So that is PENCHALET.com. Click the podcast link at the top of the website and enter the password Pen Addict. With Pen Chalet, you'll get free shipping on orders of over $75 in the US, and they sell internationally as well with very reasonable shipping rates. Pen Chalet has low prices on high quality pens and offers a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Our thanks to Pen Chalet for the support of this show and Relay FM.
All right, Mike, we have our shout out of the week.
Shout out of the week.
I need a pen store, Mike. What a good name.
Have you heard about Pen Chalet?
Have you heard about our friends at Pen Chalet? But no, this is so Frank at Fontaplumo put up basically like a travel guide for if you're in, you know, you're traveling and you want to find out if there's a pen store around you, you can check out I Need a Pen Store. So that's a really cool kind of one-stop place. We'll certainly reference. We always get a traveling question. Hey, is there a map of stationery stores? And this is a place, this is a website where you can, you know, search by shop name, you can search by location you're in, you can search by manufacturer to see what shops might carry a manufacturer. So yeah, it's a really neat setup and tool for all of us who are looking for pen shops. If we're traveling on the road, maybe see something we haven't been familiar with before. And I just wanted to give Frank a shout out for putting this out there. It's really neat.
Excellent.
All right, Mike, when you're traveling the world,
yeah,
you might need to keep track of the time and the various time zones you're in. So what if I told you that there was a watch that could help you with that, and it was stationary adjacent in that it was a collaboration with the Pen Addict, and our friends over at Notice created a watch.
Very cool.
Called the Sector Dive GMT, Pen Addict Edition. So this might come as a surprise to a lot of people.
It is a little bit out of left field.
Out of left field. But we have been working on this for months behind the scenes. And by we, I mean my friend Michael Harris, who, along with the Pen Addict Slack Watches Board, worked with Notice to make a Pen Addict, you don't want to say branded, but like
themed?
Themed?
Styled?
Yeah, themed. Styled, yeah.
Inspired?
So it's orange and stainless, and it looks awesome.
And it's got the Pen Addict logo on the back as well.
On the back side. Yeah, so we kept that subtly on the back. I mean, it's large on the back, but it's not something you see.
But it's,
right?
See, it's like, not front and center.
But that's the place, you're more of a watch person than me, that's the place where you get like the little extra details, edition details,
yeah.
You know, whatever particulars yeah. you get on the back and things like that. So the Notice Sector Dive GMT, came about from the Watches channel, and I got involved through Michael wanting my approval. It's like, I don't know anything about this. Y'all do this. Mm-hmm. And wanted my approval. I'm like, heck yeah. He like gave me some mock-ups and showed it to me. So yeah, it looks super good. One of my goals with this was the charity portion. So $50 of every sale is going to our friends at St. Jude to help Children Cancer Research. Amazing. So, like, I'm making $0 on this, right? This is a not-for-profit product, if you will. I get $0 out of this. I'm actually buying mine at full price, right? Like, and then $50 of that is going to St. Jude. So this is a really cool thing. And what I did, and what Michael had such a great experience working with Notice, and one of the co-founders, Wesley Kwok, I had the opportunity to sit with Wesley, learn more about Notice, learn how this watch came about, and kind of pick his brain on the brand and how their business works. And so for the first time ever, Mike and I are going to step away mm-hmm. while I interview Wesley in the podcast. So we're going to cut in this interview, and then we'll be back once it's done. All right, everyone, we're doing something a little different today. I am being joined online by Wes Kwok from Notice Watches. How's it going today, Wes?
It's going. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is very interesting to me. I am usually pride myself on being like a top-tier interviewer and getting all the good questions in. And I've realized it's because I'm always interviewing stationary people. So this time I get to interview a watch person, mm-hmm. and I am not super dialed into the watch scene. So it's going to be fun talking to you about the project that you have helped myself, Michael, from the stationary world himself mm-hmm. and the Slack Watches channel, which we'll talk about in a second. So thank you for doing this, and I guess I want to get this started by learning a little bit about you and Notice Watches and how you started the company.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me. This is also a first for me. I've never been on a pen podcast before. I have been on a car podcast when nice. the Smoking Tire, but obviously we're going to be talking about watches for the intent of this episode. So a little bit about Notice. We started our company in 2017, so, you know, hard to believe, but I guess COVID was a big time gap in our memory, but it's been 7 years now since we started doing this. Still feels like we're the new guys. And so our specialty and focus over the past 7 years has really been sport watches. For a very specific reason, and which I'll get into in a little bit, but personally we've been me and my co-founder Cullen, who's not on this on this podcast, but you're eventually going to meet him. He and I had met when we were 13, 12 or 13 years old. So we're childhood friends. I like to say that we actually started becoming business partners way back then, because I was the only other guitar player in our grade, and he was the only other guitar player in the grade. So we were like, well, I guess we're going to start a band. And like literally the day that we met, I rolled up to his house and he showed up wearing a purple Megadeth sweater, and I was like, all right, we're gonna be friends. And since then we started working together, playing music, writing music. We actually ended up the first thing that we actually put together ourselves was a guitar. we built a guitar in, I think it was like 10th grade, 9th or 10th grade.
Wow.
And that's when I realized, wow, I personally am not really good with my hands. I'm not great at doing these, you know, the like watch assembly and all that stuff. But I noticed that he had a knack for soldering the wires in the back of a guitar. I was like, dang, this guy knows what he's doing. A few years later, we both went to college, but we went our separate ways. I went to study jazz guitar at Berkeley in Boston, and then he came out to the West Coast and went to USC here in LA. And at the same time, but not coordinated, we both got into watches. And it wasn't until we met up like a couple years later and we both noticed that the other guy was wearing a watch when we were like, hey, I guess we've got more than music in common. Ended up talking about nothing but watches, just became obsessed with watches. And then fast forward to 2017, actually 2016 is when the conversation started. But fast forward a few years and we were like, hey, we don't have a mortgage yet. We don't have a wife, no kids that we know of. So this is the time if we're going to do something, something risky, something that we have full ownership of, this is the time to do it. So we just designed a watch that we would want to wear. I guess the initial idea we had was let's design a watch and make one for each of us. And after that, we'll go off and get a real job. But we learned very quickly, as I'm sure that you know from the pen world, it becomes extremely expensive if you make like one or two. But if you make like hundreds, in our case, it was 500, it brings the cost down, becomes a little bit more reasonable. So logically, the only thing that we could do was make 500 of them and sell 498 of them. We'll keep the two for ourselves. So it did not work out that perfectly. I think we ended up selling like 200 or something like that because the quality was just terrible. We didn't know anything about what making a watch or designing a watch, but we got to keep our two watches each. And it did well enough where we were like, all right, I guess people have, they're interested in what we have to say and in the work that we're doing. So we did another watch and just kept it going.
Did you have a particular style that you wanted to create for yourselves? Like between you and Cullen, did you have like a certain aesthetic that you were trying to land on? Mm-hmm. Were you trying to be like very classic or very experimental? Or what was the thought process like around like the first watch?
Yeah, at the time, and again, 7 years ago, things have changed a lot since then. At the time, I guess all the rage was like vintage inspired design. So straight lines, not a lot of chamfers, not very complex case design. It basically was like made in the style of watches from like 50s and 60s. That was like the big thing back then, which is cool. It looks good, but it wasn't really our style. We wanted to do something a little bit more modern with more like sharper lines, maybe a little bit more curvature, more complex cases. And so we started going down that path. We through that first project, we found out that there are actually quite a lot of limitations, not so much based on what's physically possible to do, but more so what type of machinery we can get access to, how much we're willing to pay for these things. And so we started running a lot of experiments with our factories, and we actually flew out to our factories in Hong Kong, China, to just, shaking hands obviously is important just to get to know them, but we wanted to really show them that the American way of doing things is to innovate and push the envelope a little bit. And if we want a long-term relationship, they would have to be willing to do some crazy experiments for us with the expectation that it's going to fail and it's not, it's not going to end up commercially viable spot. And that, again, we're not great businessmen to be able to do that kind of thing, but we love doing it because as watch enthusiasts, we love seeing new things. We love innovating. Before notice, we loved seeing innovative design, innovative mechanisms, things like that. And we wanted to do what we could to try to push that forward for the American industry.
At what point did you or you and Cullen together realize that you had something? Was it in that first batch of watches that made you want to like push forward, or like was this like several watches down the line and a lot of debt accumulation is like, I think we got it now.
I know specifically which watch it was. It was our fourth release. It's called the Avalon. And we actually still have it in our store. We still make it. We've gone through a few versions of it. We did a bronze version, and now we're on the redesign of the platform. But I remember 2018 was probably the most painful year in my entire life, but definitely in Notice's life. And it was Thanksgiving Day when we launched it, right, in preparation for the following day, Black Friday. And I threw a party, which is a terrible day to do a launch because, you know, you have to make the turkey and entertain all your guests. So I that morning woke up early, put the turkey in the oven, and then I went straight upstairs to the office. And all these guests were coming. All my friends from childhood were coming over, and they were drinking downstairs. And I was upstairs with Cullen taking pictures, getting the site ready pretty much the entire day. We finally launched the watch at like, I think probably like 9:30 at night on Thanksgiving Day. And then we rejoined the party and, you know, got the shots out and everything. but I remember when that day when we hit live, this was kind of, it was one of those pivotal moments in our business where we closed the computer, we looked at each other and we were like, all right, if this does well, we go all in, right? This is the make it or break it moment in our business. And if tomorrow we don't hit our goal, I don't even remember what our goal was, but if we don't hit our goal tomorrow, let's make the watch, deliver it, and then start to kind of wind down and pack it up. And so had that conversation, went down, got way too drunk. And then the next day we woke up to hitting that number by like two or threefold. So at that point we were like, all right, I guess people do like what we're doing. Let's go all in at this point.
Yeah. So fast forward that to today, what's your favorite thing about having Notice and being able to have this creative platform for watchmaking? Because I've listened to a little bit of like an interview I just caught with you, and you talk about a lot of music in your background. And I think it's very interesting to have this kind of artistic background in what's a very like technical, creative process in watches. So what is it like for you and Notice now in the current day and time? What are you enjoying the most about this brand and making watches?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's both, right? Like you have, obviously there's a technical side, the technical engineering side where you need to have if you have a certain size watch, you need to know how thick the case walls have to be or the case back or the crystal for it to achieve, you know, X water resistance. So that's kind of the technical side. But on the fun side, and really where all of our designs start, is when we take all of those technical limitations or requirements away and just try to make what we envision, make what we want to make. And when I say we, I don't mean just me and Cullen. Like sometimes, like in the case of this collaboration that we're doing with the Pen Addict, this was more like we had a group that we're working with that had requirements and we try to figure out a way to make it work, right? Mm-hmm. That to me is equally as fun, right? Even though that's kind of like the more technical side. One specific example with this project is the bezel is bicolored and it's made of aluminum, and having different colors on aluminum is something we've never done before to get the transitions to be sharp. Cause I've seen it before, but the transition in the color ends up looking a little murky or foggy, and we needed it to be super, super sharp. And so we ran a bunch of tests and did a bunch of experimentation and made a whole bunch of prototypes to make it work. Like that to me is really, really fun. But it's equally as fun to, you know, sit down with Cullen and say, all right, we want to make a dual crown super compressor diver. Let's see where we can take this. Like both sides are, I just love it.
Yeah. How is it? I want you've segued me perfectly into talking about this other into what I have you on here for today. But you mentioned something about Cullen early on, and I wrote this note down as someone who's also had business partners. How important was it for Notice to have? So what you said earlier about Cullen is like, oh, you notice when you were putting guitars together, he could solder these things, right? He could do certain things and you could do certain things. How important was it to have this collaborative aspect where there's not like this 100% overlap in the design and creative process, but you know, Wes has his part and Cullen has his parts, and these things make the whole better. How is it working with a partner like that?
Yeah, well, in the early days, it's obviously a little bit blurrier, right? Like, we kind of had to do everything together and get a sense of, you know, what does it take to run different aspects of the business. As we grew, as our sales volume increased, as the number of team members on our team grew, we had to be a little bit more clear about where our lane is and what exactly our role is in the entire machine. The way I like to put it, though, is Cullen is definitely the product guy. He's the one that has the product ideas, and he figures out what's needed for Notice and what kind of things can we do to achieve a lot of these technical things that, you know, the Pen Addict needs or whoever our collaborator is. So he's definitely that. I guess in tech terms, it would be like CTO, I guess.
Okay.
And sure. My role, again, there's a very little bit of overlap in that, right? But my role is more so talking to people, getting their ideas translated into a language that Cullen can understand, right? There's that. I mean, everyone knows parts of a watch, but to get it across the finish line, we have to be able to translate it into watch terms, then translate it into the actual language that our factories speak. And so I'm kind of the liaison on the client side, whereas Cullen's the liaison on the supply side. And it works well. You know, I think I said in that interview that you were alluding to that this whole Notice was basically us getting the band back together, right? Mm-hmm. We kind of already developed that creative synergy when we were kids and figured out what he's good at, what I'm good at. And we're just continuing to develop that relationship as we get older.
Very cool. Yeah, I love hearing that about the partnerships and how the different tasks and responsibilities go. So let's get into this watch. What did you think when you got an email? I'm guessing you got an email from Michael Harris, who is a good friend and a longtime stationary lover, that the Pen Addict Slack would like to make a watch and they would like Notice to make it. What did you think when you got this email?
Yeah, so I actually remember exactly when that happened too. We had we had just released another collaboration, and what it is. So there are three main pillars of our business. One is Nodex, which is our kind of research and design platform. We test new things. We have like an R&D budget that we just try out a bunch of different experiments. The second one is Intersect, which is a show. It's not really a show. It's more like a cocktail party. If you actually like go there and attend it, you know what I mean. The last one is Design Lab, and that's our collaborative platform. And that's where Michael emailed us through. And essentially what it is if someone wants to make a watch, not a watch company, but a watch, and they specifically don't want to start a watch company because that's a whole different headache in itself.
Yeah.
Where can they go to do that? And we want it to be that place. And it's not like, I mean, collaborations are very common in the watch industry, but most of the time what it is they change a color or they just add they add a logo on the dial or something like that. We wanted our platform to be a bit more flexible where we could actually do pretty much anything that our collaborators want, within reason, obviously. So in the past, we've done stuff as deep as creating an entirely new platform. That was for our last collaboration. I think that was the one that that Michael reached out because of. But I was excited. You know, I already knew that there was a lot of crossover between the watch and the pen world. I actually was just dipping my toe into the pen world. I got myself a bronze tactile turn.
Nice.
Which I'm a big fan of. I still use it. And so I was dipping my toe into that world. I was also getting into like the denim world. I got into the sneaker world. I'm a big knife guy. So I already know that there's all this like overlap between, I guess, the EDC community. But we never had direct exposure to the pen world before. So I wanted to see what it was like to work with someone that was primarily in the pen world, like yourself and Michael. So I was super excited by that, by the idea of just, you know, being exposed to something new.
Yeah, and it's new for me too. I like to joke with Michael and all the members in the watch channel in our Slack. So the Pen Addict Slack, which, you know, our podcast listeners will be familiar with. I was looking the other day and we've had like I forget what year I started it, but it's had over 6 million messages in the Slack. And I would like to joke that 5.9 million of them come from the Watches channel. So that's the big that's the big joke in the Slack channel. That's by far the most active, passionate board in the Slack. So I'm not surprised that they wanted to come up with something like this. And when they hit me with it, I was like, yeah, sure. Like, go for it. They just wanted my sign off to like use the name, maybe use like colors, you know, orange, I think looks great in watches.
Oh yeah.
Traditionally. So I was like, yeah. And looking at Notice, I was like, oh, this could turn out pretty cool. And what y'all created, looks spectacular. Can you tell us like what the watch is about? Why, or which platform y'all use to make this watch, mm-hmm. and what are the features of this watch?
Yeah, sure. So the platform was actually, to be fair, there was no pre-existing platform before this.
Okay.
Right. So the Sector platform is kind of what we built it on, but there is no Sector Dive GMT. There was a Sector Dive and a Sector GMT. Obviously, was a dive watch. One was a GMT. And so Michael's idea was, it was brilliant because we, for some reason, had never thought of it, even though it's kind of like a, you know, let's just put it together, Dive GMT.
Yeah.
So it literally is the two put together. And really, he did all the legwork in figuring out what does the pen addict community want in a watch, you know, what everything from like colors, but also to functionality. So one of the big changes that we made after, you know, smashing the GMT and Dive together, one of the big changes was instead of doing the Dive bezel as like a standard Dive bezel, we did a countdown bezel. So the utility is a little bit different. I'll put on the website soon. Actually, right after this call, I'll send you the link to actually describe the differences. But
yeah, and Michael actually shot a video explaining that. I was like, oh, okay, yes, I see this. Yeah.
Yeah. So the utility is a little bit different. And then I guess you guys did a limited edition poker chip for the mm-hmm. group as well. And that's where that idea came from the bezel design, to just model it after that poker chip.
Yep.
Yeah. And then new color. So yeah, it was one of those things where Michael really did all the legwork, figured out what the group wants. And, you know, it sounds pretty straightforward, but really kudos to him, because when you find yourself in a design by committee situation, you're going to tear your hair out, you know, and Michael did a really good job of filtering it. And, you know, maybe he has a future in watch design someday.
That was actually, I kind of had like a side question. I was like, I was not even going to get into it, but I was like, what, you know, do you prefer like the design by committee aspect, or do you prefer to just like, hey, here's the concept, you go? And it's like, I mean, there's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. Each project is individual. Yeah, so I'm glad that this design by committee seemed to work out very well. And, you know, I'm just getting all the updates and Michael's explaining all this and I'm really just nodding my head. I'm like, yes, it looks awesome. That was like the extent of my thing. But yeah, it really does look awesome. I'm excited about this. I am thrilled to be able to work with you guys and to see what everyone thinks about this watch. And I'm just stunned and shocked and pleased with how it turned out.
Yeah, thank you. And I would say arguably the most important part of this project is where the funds go. You know, we want to do as much as we can for charity, especially like no one really needs a fancy watch. So at the very least, if we're going to sell a product like this, we want to benefit charity anywhere we can, right? So like last year we did two charitable projects. One was with a local Atlanta charity, and then one was with a Navy veteran charity. So this is one of those projects that's going to try to help us, you know, fill our quota of charity work for the year.
100%, and that's something I believe in. Michael actually pretty much led with that for me, and I was like, yes, I'm in. Like, it was a very mm-hmm. simple aspect. So we'll be donating $50 for every watch sold to St. Jude's Children's mm-hmm. Hospital, which is a big charitable group that we support every year with some big things through our podcast network. So mm-hmm. I really appreciate you helping and participating in that. So yeah, it's super cool. So I think I think that's it on the Panatic watch side, but I know that's not anywhere near it for Notus. So why don't you tell me what's the future looking like for Notus? What is on your drawing board? What is coming soon? Tell our listeners what's going on with you.
Sure. So earlier I alluded to the three kind of pillars of our business. So I think at least the one that's taken the most of my time right now is Intersect, which is the kind of the watch event that we host around the country, eventually around the world. But again, I definitely underestimated how difficult event planning is. You know, of all the years of running Notus, I think planning events is the single hardest thing I've probably ever done in my life.
I'm shaking my head vigorously. Yeah. Because you will not be seeing the video.
Yeah. But in 2 weeks we're expanding to Atlanta. So we have Atlanta planned for March 23rd. Last year we did Dallas and LA. So I think three events for this year feels about right. We had Seattle planned, but we literally had a conversation this morning about how stressful Atlanta is, and let's just table Seattle to let's debut one city per year max, and we'll keep there it at go. That. So we have Atlanta coming up March 23rd. We have LA in the summer, in September, and then we're moving Dallas down to Austin. It's just a bit more central, a bit of a larger community. That'll be end of the year to close out the year. That's one aspect. We're working on a lot more. So under the Nodex department, that's kind of our R&D side. We're working on a bunch of different things right now. So the first product that we launched under Nodex was an extendable clasp. You'll be getting that on the Panatic
watch.
Yeah,
I saw that on the video. It looks cool.
But we're refining it, and we're also making it in different sizes, working on licensing it to more brands. We just picked up a UK brand and a couple US brands in the past couple months, so we're onboarding them. But we have a bunch of ideas about a new bezel mechanism, a new crown mechanism. I'm sure your listeners don't even know or care about what any of this means yet until they feel the watch and they're like, oh, okay, I get it.
That's right. That's right. I think a lot of them will. It's like, yeah, I think there's definitely some secret watch lovers out there for sure.
So a lot of just like kind of, for now, we're keeping it quiet because we don't know if any of these things are going to work. Sure. And then on the design lab side, we have some pretty massive collabs coming up. So after the Pen Addict, we have a collab. Well, we're going to continue our relationship with Matt Farah. So we're working on a dive watch with him as well. He actually introduced us to a couple of his buddies from the YouTube world. So we're going to be working with them all in the kind of like the YouTube car space. Gotcha. We have a project coming up with a bourbon enthusiast who's also a pretty well known. And always looking for more collaborations, more cool ideas. I think we're probably going to do another military veteran project this year at some point. Other than the Pen Addict, the other collab I'm excited for that's launching around the same time is our collaboration with Raven Watches, which I'm sure Michael knows about. They're based in Kansas City. So collaborations is really obviously a big part of our business now.
Yeah, I love seeing that, and I love seeing all the different people you're working with, and spreading the watch awareness around and getting a lot of people involved. And I think it's really cool, and I'm really excited to be part of this project and get to meet you and get to learn about Notus. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, share your story, tell us about the watch. I'm sure I'll be picking your brain in the future. So thank you so much, Wes.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
So this is an incredible project. I loved hearing Wes's story too. I mean, it's not too dissimilar to the stories that we've both had as well, right? Of like finding the thing that you love and then trying to make it work. So it was great to hear. For people that are interested in checking out the watch, can you give some of the particulars? Because it isn't super straightforward, right? Like there is some stuff that people would want to know about how to buy the product. Could you explain a little bit about that? Obviously, there'll be links in the show notes for people to go get it.
Yep. So this is essentially a pre-order, right? So Notus has built the prototype. Michael's been wearing the prototype. We've settled on the final design and details and price of the watch. So we'll have the link into the Notus page for the watch. So the total price of the watch is $475. You will pay 50% deposit today. So this is a limited time window for this to be open. So I think this will close on like March 27th. So like 2 weeks from today. Mm-hmm. So you have 2 weeks to put it down a deposit for this watch. And then when the watch ships in like the July timeframe of this year, when it's ready to ship, Notice will then collect the remaining balance, so the 50% balance. So this is based around one of Notice's dive watches, which Wesley discussed like some of those details in here. And it has basically all the features that the Slack Watches channel wanted to see, right? It had the dive aspects of the watch. You know, it's got the steel bracelet, 100 meters water resistance. It has a GMT.
Also comes with a leather bracelet, though. So leather strap, that is, or the link bracelet.
So shout out to Wes for this. He sprung that on us at the last minute. So like with these types of watches, right, the bracelet is swappable. I know Michael's been testing out the regular stainless bracelet and then the like the NATO strap, you know, nylon bracelets. And then unbeknownst to Michael and myself, Wesley is adding in a pecan brown Horween leather strap. So you have a second strap option for this that comes with the watch, right? So that was really neat. And I really like the GMT aspect of it. So now I can keep track of you, whenever I need it. I've never seen a watch that's done this before, but apparently this is a thing, you know.
I have a GMT watch. I really like GMT watches. Basically, it's an extra hand that you can set to another time zone. So you can see the hours in two different places. It's very good for travel because you can set, you know, your home and your current location.
Yep. And then I like the countdown bezel, as opposed to a count up bezel, which is what a traditional dive watch would have, right? So this you can set more as a timer style bezel to count down from say 30 minutes to zero, as opposed to counting up, which is what traditional diver style bezels would do. So it's spectacular. It's orange. It's
obviously,
it's completely awesome. I don't know what else to say other than like every step of the way, like my jaw just dropped. Like Michael would email me and I'd be like, you're kidding, right? And you're kidding, right? And it's just on and on and on. And like they did all of this. This has been months in the making, I think since probably last fall. We started working on this, and Michael and Wes would kind of loop me in as we were going through, and it's just been a pleasure to work with these guys in building this product, and I'm really excited.
So yeah, there'll be links in the show notes. You should go check it out for yourself. Obviously, it's a beautiful watch, and with proceeds going to charity too. I mean, that's a 2-for-1 right there. We'll talk about it again, I think, next week too, right? As a reminder for people.
Yeah, we'll let everyone know. Yeah, and then there is a blog post that just went up as you're listening to this. You can go to pinnac.com. We'll have a link to the exact post in the show notes, but Michael's write-up of the watch, and he's been using it for probably like the final prototype for probably like a good month. So he has a write-up on that, plus some of the pictures, action shots, and video of how it all works. So yeah, go check it out. I think a lot of y'all will be pleasantly surprised in how this turned out, and it's quite a cool crossover between our communities here, and I'm super happy to be a part of it.
All right, if you want to go and check all of that out for yourself, you can find the links in your podcast app of choice, but you can go to relay.fm/penaddict/606. Thank you to Penn Chalet for their support of this episode. Thank you to us for joining us. It was super cool, and I'm really excited about this, Brad. I think this is super great. I love that you've done this. What a weird and wonderful thing to do. If you want to find Brad online, go to penaddict.com. That's where you'll also find the blog post talking about the watch. You can find Brad on social. He's at PenAddict, PenAddict. You should know that, though. And go to twitch.tv/PenAddict, where Brad streams 3 times a week. You can find me. I'm iMike, I-M-Y-K-E, and you can find my products over at CortexBrand.com. We'll be back next week. Until then, say goodbye, Brad.
Goodbye, Brad.